Hello, I'm Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, and I lead the Justice, Equity, and Opportunity Initiative. Welcome to my podcast series, Walk, Listen, Learn, Our Journey to Justice. Why a podcast? Well, I wanted to combine three things I love: walking, listening, and learning, as the title suggests. I'm also passionate about people and finding engaging ways to discuss issues. So thanks for joining me. Today, we're talking about bail reform, and my guest today is Sherone Mitchell Jr. Sherone is director of the Illinois Justice Project, and he was previously a trial attorney with the Cook County Public Defender's Office. Sherone's work focuses on adult justice, specializing in pretrial issues, sentencing policy, and violence prevention. Sherone, thank you for walking, listening, and learning with us. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Lieutenant Governor. I'm really excited to get involved in this conversation.
Well, I'm excited that you're here. We've known each other for some time and have worked together on a lot of different issues. But today we're going to be talking about bail reform. And, you know, first and foremost, I want to say that there's all these terms that we have been hearing about related to bail reform, and it's a conversation that is happening nationally. But I also know that when we hear things like pretrial detention and bond court, or even the terms bail and bond, that there can be a lot of confusion about what all of these things mean. So I was hoping that you could begin our conversation by talking a little bit about the process. So I think most people understand that someone can be arrested and then charged with an offense or a crime. But what happens next? Because I think that is, we need to understand what happens next before we even get into all these words. So what happens after someone is arrested and charged?
Somebody's arrested, they typically go before a judge. And a judge will make a decision right there after the arrest about what happens to the person, from the time in which they are arrested to the time of the resolution of the case.
Okay.
So a judge will basically have three decisions. A judge could decide, hey, I'm going to let you go. The case is still going on. You're still required to go to trial, or you're still required to come to court dates, but you'll serve this, you'll wait out at home. That's option one.
Okay.
Option number two is a judge could say, listen, you're too big of a risk either for public safety, or we don't think you'll come back to court, so we're going to hold you in jail. And the third option is a kind of combination of the two, and it's really been the target of reformers. Mm-hmm. And that is the judge saying, hey, you're eligible for release. We're fine with you leaving, but you've got to pay a certain amount of money, a certain amount of money to the court, and you may get some of that money back at the end of the case. And that is the option that reformers are trying to challenge. That's money bond. That's putting up a money bond. And there are lots of people out there that are trying to stop that practice.
Okay, so let's just kind of, I want to recap this just a little because I like the way you put that into three different possibilities. One is go home, and you still have to come to court and wait out your trial and get to the resolution. Is that considered something? Is that no bond, or what is that considered?
In Illinois or in Cook County, sometimes we call it I bonds.
Okay.
Sometimes you hear individual reconnaissance bonds. But that just means, again, that you're going to be going through this process at home.
And we trust, the court is saying, we trust that you're going to come to court. We trust you're going to show up. You're not going to leave the state. You're going to be here to see this thing out.
Exactly. And there may be conditions that a judge may put on a person when they are released. Some people call it a signature bond. But there are requirements. Come to court. Be on time. And there could be some other things placed by the judge.
Okay. And then you said that a person could end up in jail. And I want to just kind of, we talked a little bit about this in another episode. But again, jail is different than prison.
Absolutely, Lieutenant Governor. Jail is mainly for people who are awaiting trial.
Okay.
So about 90% of people who are in jail in the state are there awaiting trial.
And it's at the county level.
And it's typically at the county level.
Across the state, there are county jails all across the state where someone who is awaiting trial might be held in that jail. They have not been sentenced typically. I mean, there's a small amount that maybe, but 90% of people are awaiting trial.
Yeah, and about 92 jails across our state. Most of our counties have a jail, as you said, that they operate. Some smaller counties share a jail.
Okay. And then this third option, though, brings us to this conversation about bail reform. So talk to me about the word bail, and actually talk to me about bail versus bond, because people go to what's called bond court.
Exactly.
So
in Illinois, it's pretty interchangeable.
Okay.
Bail means release. And when you put a word next to it, that kind of talks about the type of release. So when we're talking about money bail or money bond, we're talking about putting money up to get a release.
Okay.
So in states where there are bail bondsmen, the difference
Which is not Illinois.
Okay. We are one of four states to not have bail bondsmen.
Only four?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yes. So there are no bail bondsmen here. So because of that, the difference between bail and bond there's not a real difference. People use it interchangeably. So we're talking about release. How are you going to be released? So when we talk about no bond, that means you won't be released. There's no way you can be released. When we talk about money bond, that is you put up a certain amount of money to get released.
Okay. And so what are the kinds of considerations? Because I think people kind of look at news stories and they hear all of these sort of wildly, you know, distinct bond amounts of how much somebody needs to pay. What are the factors that judges are thinking about with this? Or what should they be thinking about?
Well, that's one of the problems with the system. Typically, a person is going to be held in jail for one of two reasons if they're following the law, and it's either a risk of public safety or a risk to not come back to court. And to make that decision, judges, the statute, depending on how well you can count commas and semicolons, there are about 37 things that a judge can consider. And if you talk to judges, it's a really confusing mess.
Sure.
So there are a number of things that a judge could look at. Typically, it might be the person's criminal history. It could be the allegation. It could be their connections to the community, their family, their jobs. There are a whole host of things that judges could consider when making this decision.
And so what is the problem? So it sounds like, you know, someone could go home on I bond, or, you know, really just kind of go home on their own recognizance. It's somebody who is told you have to stay in jail while you're awaiting trial. And then there's this group that can put some sort of money.
Yeah.
What's the issue? Why are people coming together and organizing around this issue of money related to release?
Yeah, there are a number of reasons. And I think the first is that using money or using access to money to determine whether you're going to be in or out is a really broken model. Mm-hmm. There are a number of reasons why. And the first, I think, main line is that it's just unfair. We have a number of people who are in our justice system that do not have access to money. And because they don't have access to money, that means that they are going to remain in jail. Now, listen, many people will agree that there may be room for jail. There's rooms for jail in our county, in our state, in our country. But making money being the main determinant of who's going to be there is really unfair. And what we've seen is a significant increase in the amount of people in jail, not because a judge has said that they are unsafe or that they shouldn't be out, it's because they're just poor. So since 1970, we've seen a 433% increase in the use of jails and pretrial incarceration. And many of that is driven by our use of money bond.
Well, what does that mean? Like, what changed since the 70s? I mean, and we've had an episode on mass incarceration, so we know that there was a period of time of really this sort of tough on crime model. But how does that relate to money bond and jails?
Yeah, you know, sometimes we just do things because it's what we were taught to do. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot of times in the justice system. And we started using money bond a little bit more. We started using jails a little bit more. We started using prisons a little bit more.
It became the thing to do.
It became the way we treat communities, right?
Yeah.
Lots of people talk about how we don't invest enough in our communities, and we really don't. And I think this office is doing a great job of turning that around. But one of the ways we've invested in communities in the past is through the carceral state.
Mm.
It's through prisons and policing and all of these things. We've tried to fix problems in our community through reactions to crime instead of actually preventing those harms and preventing those sources. And that's why I'm super happy to be working with the administration, because everybody wants to be safe.
Yeah, no, that's really, I think, at the crux of this conversation, the fact that everyone wants to be safe. Like, I have never talked to anyone out of the close to 13 million people in this state. And of course, I haven't talked to all of them, but
talk to a lot of them. I've seen your Instagram.
I try to get out there, but you know what? I never hear anyone say that being safe or having their family be safe is not an issue. What I've heard, though, is that this focus on money, and I think that's what you're alluding to, is not necessarily something that does the best job of protecting public safety.
It does not do the best job of protecting public safety, but it doesn't do the best job of many things, right? So let's say, for instance, there is a person that you do want to detain. Using money, and we use money a whole lot, isn't the best way to determine whether that person should be there.
Yeah.
If we're going to make those determinations, we should be looking at risk. We shouldn't be looking at money, especially given that the vast majority of the people who touch the criminal justice system are poor.
Yes.
So if over 80% of people are in the system, who are in the system are poor, using money as that barometer is really a mistake. And there's one more thing.
I know you have one more thing, but I want to just kind of hold there for a moment.
Yes.
Someone who is told, you can go home if you pay this amount of money. If they're poor, they can't pay that amount of money, and they're going to linger in the jail. Mm-hmm. But somebody who has the resources, mm-hmm. even if with a higher bond amount, because mm-hmm. maybe they have a little bit more risk and somebody puts a higher amount, but if they have resources, they can get out.
Absolutely.
Regardless
of what the offense was. You know, I'm the same person when I was, you know, I've changed a little bit, but let's say me at 24 versus me at 34 versus me at 40, right?
Yeah.
Because I have a little bit more money because I have a job, I can get out of jail. I can buy my way out of jail.
It doesn't mean that you're, you know what I mean? Like,
same person, right?
Same person.
Same person, could be the same
circumstances,
charges,
same charge,
everything. But because I have access to money, I'm going to be released. And we know that that has a real impact on the rest of the system. People who are in jail before their trial are more likely to plead guilty. Mm. They're more likely to serve a longer prison sentence. So it's really hard to talk about things like mass incarceration and wrongful convictions if we're not talking about what happens at the front
jails.
Door.
Yeah.
What happens at jail? What happens at bond courts?
Yeah. And then I know, and I hope you can recall what else you wanted to share, but I wanted to also talk about the sort of how that intersects with race.
Yeah.
Because when you also say the majority of people who linger in the jails are there because they are poor, we also see racial disparities in terms of who's in our jails.
Yeah. Those numbers are out there. There have been different numbers to suggest it's somewhere between 45 to 55% of the people who are in jails in Illinois are Black, despite being a smaller portion of the population. But we also know from studies from California that Black folks are more likely to get higher bonds than their white counterparts. And brown folks are more likely to get higher bonds than their white counterparts, even when you control for background and charge. So mm-hmm. you don't have to look very hard to see the racial disparities with using money. And obviously, we know that some communities, because of historical disinvestment and lots of things that this administration is working on, sometimes find themselves in a worse financial state.
Yeah.
So the people who are getting the highest bonds are in the worst position to pay those bonds.
But people, people want to be safe.
Absolutely.
So if you're saying that bail reform could mean fewer people in jail, how do you explain that to people, say, but what about public safety?
Yeah, I'll say that in a couple of ways. And it comes from my experience as an attorney and also growing up on the South Side and also working in this policy space and looking at the studies.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is this. There is a real harm in pulling a significant amount of money out of communities. So let's just talk about the people that are able to make the bonds, right? I've had conversations with grandmothers and mothers and churches who are making horrible decisions.
Hmm.
Do I pay my rent or do I bond out John? Do I pay my light bill or do I bond out John?
Because Sharon, the bottom line is that people who can't afford bond, it's not like the money shows just poof out of the air. Mm-hmm. They're going to family members and they're asking everyone they know, can you pitch in a little to help me post bond?
Very rarely is the person who's actually arrested the person that's paying bond. So we love to talk about harm and violence, but we talk about it in a specific way. Mm-hmm. And we have to start being a little bit more, we have to start looking at the problem and seeing what really creates harm. And pulling that amount of money out of communities creates harm. But even in a more traditional sense, we know from studies that people who stay in jail for a short period of time are more likely to actually be arrested for other crimes.
Hmm.
Remember, we are really damaging a person's life cycle by putting them in jail. If they had to pay rent and they're in jail for just a couple weeks and they bond out, that means they're not be able to pay rent.
Mm-hmm.
If they had a job and they have to stay in jail for a couple weeks, that means they lose that job. Childcare, family care issues. We really disrupt a person's life when we put them in jail for a short period of time. That's not to say that jails shouldn't exist at all. There's some real back and forth about that. But the fact of the matter is the study suggests that these short-term stays in jail actually pose a risk to public safety. Mm-hmm. People are more likely to recidivate if they stay in jail for a short period of time.
And recidivate.
Recidivate. Sorry, I apologize.
I want to make sure everyone understands.
Keep me in check. They're more likely to be arrested. They're more likely to be accused of other crimes. They're more likely to do things that we don't love as a society because we're putting economic stress on those folks.
Mm-hmm.
I think the third thing, and when we're talking about safety, is that using money to make that call and not risk yourself actually creates situations where there may be people that we decide as a society may be better suited for being in jail for a bit that don't stay there, right? Because we're using money and not risk.
Yeah.
So we definitely want to work to a place where we're reducing our use of jails. But in the end, making money be the deciding factor doesn't keep our communities safe. And we know we have jurisdictions that don't use money, that are able to operate their criminal justice systems, and they're able to maintain the same amount of safety as they did before.
Then what's the alternative? Because I've heard you say, if we don't use risk, what does that mean? So, right now there's some factors statutorily, I think you said, that's in the state statute that judges can look at. It may not be as clear as judges might want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
These decisions are being made about how much money for someone to be able to go home or whether they're going to stay in jail. But without this process as it is now, when those who are working on bail reform like yourself and others, what is the alternative?
Yeah, we want a system where we end the use of cash bond so that judges are making decisions just based upon the person themselves and the allegation, the charges, and we don't have this money middleman, okay? And we know that the use of money, we're kind of an outlier, right? The juvenile system doesn't use money. The federal system, which prosecutes anything from tax evasion to terrorism, doesn't use money. And we have jurisdictions all across the country that are challenging the use of money bond and are looking to make changes like Washington, D.C., who hasn't used money bond in decades, and New Jersey that just changed their system. We're just looking to go to a system where we remove money bond. Now, there's some changes that we need to make, and that's the key thing, too. It's not just as easy as any money bond. We need to really, really look at some of the processes and practices, but it can be done. And advocates have brought forth a lot of changes, working with experts to really figure out how we can remove money bond and operate a safe and fair society.
Where does the money go?
Yeah.
That has collected for bond?
Yeah, so when a person puts up bond, depending upon where they're at in the state, either they will put that bond up, and if the person completes their process, they go to trial, they go to every court date, the person could get up to 90% of the money back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So many counties will take 10% off the top. There also could be fines, or there could be fees, that could be taken out. So,
but you're talking about people again who are disproportionately poor and under-resourced. That just kind of contributes to keeping that going.
Yeah,
right?
And the money could come back. The money's supposed to come back, but sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes it's short. And what we see is real economic damage to communities and to people. So let's say we're in a situation where they get the money back. That's not what happens, but let's say they get the money back 100%. Just taking that money away from people who are on the edge could create real economic damage. That means a bill's not paid. That means we're running up credit cards. That means that somebody has to take a second job and we're worried about childcare.
Right.
It's a real problem.
You know, I want to just say, kind of as we close out this conversation, that I've been visiting, you know, I visit in my role, and especially leading the Justice, Equity, and Opportunity Initiative. I've visited juvenile facilities, I've visited jails, I've visited prisons throughout the state. And one thing that I have done during my years in working in this space is I've visited bond court.
Yeah.
Particularly, I remember a visit to the Cook County Bond Court, and I was struck by the amount of time that individuals spend in front of the judge for that decision about whether or not those factors of are you a flight risk or are you a threat to public safety, and whether or not money should keep you from going back to your community and continuing to do things like work or go to school or you know, pay your rent or be with your family, whatever else. When I tell you it was, I feel like seconds, maybe it was longer than that, but I feel like it was 45 seconds to a minute. And this long line of people coming before the judge, quick, something by the state's attorney, something by the public defender typically, and then they were gone. I mean, it happened so quickly. So in addition to this issue about, you know, bail reform or bond reform, this concept of justice as it relates to the process. Any thoughts on that? Or?
Yeah, you know, it seems like seconds, and you seem like you're questioning yourself. No, it's seconds, right? Yeah. So there was a study done a few years back before there were a few significant changes a couple years ago that timed what was happening in Cook County.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about 37 seconds per hearing.
Wow.
And this is the most important decision in a criminal case other than innocence or guilt. Whether you will be in or whether you'll be out is the second most important decision. It really makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've made some changes in Cook County, and now we're at about 2 minutes. Now we're about 3 minutes. So a market change, but nothing like where we should be. So,
but I'm glad to hear that it's much longer. I mean, 37 seconds moving to 2 to 3 minutes, even though that's still short, it still means that more information that can be helpful to the judge
exactly.
is coming out.
And there are people that have written Cook County who have taken real leadership in making things better. And the Coalition to End Money Bond has been a part of that. But as you talk about process and justice, along with ending money bond, we need to set up systems, a pretrial justice system that has real criteria that encourages real hearings.
Mm-hmm.
So in New Jersey, when you would go to that equivalent hearing, they're spending 20 minutes because there are standards and there's a system built in to make sure that we are really examining what should happen here. Because right now, the status quo, people sometimes get scared that we're kind of, you know, going to do something. The status quo isn't safe.
Yeah.
The status quo isn't just. What's happening right now isn't keeping us safe. We need to take this decision much more seriously, and we can do it. And we've got the strategies to do it, and it's been done before, and we're hoping to take Illinois in that direction.
Sharon, thank you for walking, listening, and learning with us today.
I appreciate it.
This has been fascinating, and we look forward to continuing to work with you on these issues.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. That's it for this episode of Walk, Listen, Learn, Our Journey to Justice. Until next time, I'm Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. Thank you for walking, listening, and learning with me. Let's stay on this path towards justice, equity, and opportunity for all.